Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome. Today, we are diving deep into the intellectual life of, well, a real giant of the 20th century, Bertrand Russell. And we're looking at him through A.C. Grayling's fantastic biography.
He's such a fascinating figure. Tried to, you know, impose logical order on, well, pretty much everything, and then took that same rigor out into the world to fight injustice.
Absolutely. Russell is just so key to understanding the modern mind, isn't he? He lived through this huge shift from, like, Victorian certainty.
Right, that rigid world.
To the chaos and anxiety of the 20th century. Two world wars, the nuclear age.
And he faced it all head on. Not with fear, but with, well, reason. Pure, relentless reason.
He was so many things. A mathematician, philosopher, activist, social critic, even won a Nobel Prize for literature.
And went to jail.
Twice.
Twice, for sticking to his principles.
Exactly. So what are we really trying to get at in this deep dive? We want to explore, like Grayling does, how one person's fierce commitment to truth and logic could have such a massive impact.
Yeah, across so many different fields, from really abstract maths to, you know, global peace movements.
How can that kind of intellectual brilliance actually be used, you know, practically?
That's the core question Grayling tackles, I think. How can a really disciplined mind lead to real, sometimes costly, social change? Russell's life is kind of the blueprint for that engaged intellectual.
Okay, so let's talk about the author who's guiding us here, A.C. Grayling. He's a major contemporary philosopher himself.
Definitely. Professor at Birkbeck, founded the New College of the Humanities. He's written a ton, and he's really good at making complex stuff. Well, understandable, like in the meaning of things.
And what makes him such a good fit to write about Russell?
Well, it's his background, really. He's got this dual expertise. First, he's an expert in analytic philosophy.
Which Russell basically co-founded.
Exactly. So he gets the really technical side, the deep logic stuff from Russell's early work. He understands the nuts and bolts of something like Principia Mathematica.
Which, let's be honest, most of us haven't read cover to cover.
Mm-hmm.
So how does Grayling make us care about that dense academic side? What's the point of all that intense logic?
That's where the second part of Grayling's expertise comes in. Like Russell, he's a public philosopher. He believes philosophy should engage with the world.
Okay.
So he can appreciate both the technical genius and the passionate conviction driving Russell's activism later on. He sees it wasn't two separate things.
Ah, so he sees the connection, the unity.
Precisely. He argues that the philosophical tools Russell developed weren't just for abstract problems. They were ultimately meant to clarify human life, human problems.
And that unity, that connection, is really the core idea of the book, right?
Yes. Grayling presents Russell as this ideal of the complete intellectual, someone who takes that rigorous philosophical approach and applies it everywhere from maths puzzles to, you know, political crises.
It wasn't just an academic exercise for him.
Not at all. The book really drives home how seamless it was. The same analytical method he used to pick apart paradoxes in set theory, that same cold, hard logic, that was the tool he used later to expose the flaws and arguments for war, or the basis of social injustice. It wasn't like he switched careers. It was one continuous application of reason.
Wow. And the book covers his whole life. It's quite a sweep.
Oh, it's epic. Grayling takes us from his pretty lonely, aristocratic childhood.
Right.
Through the revolutionary work and logic. His very controversial views on things like marriage and education, all the way to becoming this global voice against war and nuclear weapons.
It's nearly a century of change, both in the world and within Russell himself, from seeking certainty to kind of embracing doubt and action.
Exactly. It's quite a journey.
So let's start with that early part, the quest for certainty. Grayling describes this lonely kid finding comfort in maths.
You know, that sort of emotionally repressed childhood. He found refuge, his first love, he called it, in the clean, absolute truths of mathematics, something reliable.
And that passion led him to Cambridge and to shaking things up.
Big time. He and G.E. Moore basically spearheaded this rebellion against the dominant philosophy of the time, British idealism. They pushed for realism, for logical clarity.
And that kicked off analytic philosophy?
Pretty much. It set the stage for a whole new way of doing philosophy, which is still hugely influential.
Which leads us to the big one, Principia Mathematica, with Alfred North Whitehead.
Monumental. Published between 1910 and 1913. Their goal was incredibly ambitious, to prove that all of mathematics could be derived from pure logic.
To build this perfectly secure foundation for all knowledge.
Yes. But then, disaster struck. Or rather, Russell discovered it.
Russell's paradox.
Exactly. A fundamental contradiction right at the heart of set theory. The example usually given is the set of all sets that don't contain themselves. Does that set contain itself?
Uh-oh. If it does, it shouldn't. If it doesn't, it should.
Precisely. It's a logical loop, a self-contradiction. And it basically blew up their hope for simple certainty.
Wow. So what did he do? Just give up?
No, that wasn't Russell's style. He had to find a way around it. He developed complex tools, the most famous being the theory of types.
Theory of types. What did that do in simple terms?
Think of it like creating levels or hierarchies. You can't have a set defined in terms of itself in that problematic way. It prevents that kind of self-reference that leads to the paradox. It was a patch, a way to rebuild.
Okay, so he's developing these tools for logic and math, but how do they connect to broader philosophy?
Well, take his theory of descriptions. This came out in a famous paper in 1905 on denoting. It sounds technical, but it had huge implications for how we understand language.
How so?
Grayling explains it well. Before Russell, philosophers got tied in knots over sentences like, the present king of France is bald. Since there is no king of France, does that mean the sentence is nonsense? Or does it refer to some shadowy, non-existent king?
Right, metaphysical headaches.
Exactly. Russell showed how to break that sentence down logically. He showed it was meaningful and actually false, without needing to assume some weird, non-existent king exists. He was clearing away philosophical confusion caused by language itself.
So using logic to clean up language and thought.
Precisely. He also worked on logical atomism for a while with Wittgenstein.
His famous student.
Right. Trying to find the simplest atomic sacks that reality is built on and how the language mirrors them. Another attempt to get at the fundamental structure of things.
But then something major shifted him, right? World War I.
Yes, Grayling calls it the Great Pivot. 1914 changes everything. The outbreak of war turns Russell from this, you know, somewhat detached academic logician into a passionate public activist.
He started speaking out against the war.
Very prominently, he became a leading pacifist voice, applying that same ruthless logic to the arguments for war. And it cost him.
He lost his job at Trinity College, Cambridge.
Dismissed from his lectureship, yes. And then, in 1918, he was imprisoned for his anti-war writings.
Wow. But even in prison, he kept working.
Unbelievably, yes. This is where Grayling really highlights the connection. While he was locked up in Brixton Prison, he wrote the Introduction to Mathematical Philosophy.
You're kidding. In jail.
In jail. It's this incredibly clear, accessible book on the foundations of math. It just shows how intertwined his intellectual drive and his political commitments were. He couldn't switch off either part of his brain.
So after the war, he really embraced this public role.
Fully. The interwar period saw him writing widely on social issues, morality, education, religion. He and his second wife, Dora Black, even started an experimental school.
Beacon Hill School, right. Based on rationalism and freedom.
That's the one. Very progressive for its time. He was constantly challenging convention.
Well, courting controversy, I imagine.
Oh, definitely. Books like Marriage and Morals, his essay, Why I Am Not a Christian. He applied his logical analysis to traditional beliefs and, well, it ruffled a lot of feathers.
Okay, fast forward to after World War II, the nuclear age. Right. What was his role then?
This is what Grayling calls his final crusade. In the Cold War era, Russell became arguably the world's leading moral voice against nuclear weapons.
Applying logic again.
Yes. He saw nuclear war as the ultimate irrationality, a threat to humanity's very existence. His logic demanded action against it.
And this led to the Russell-Einstein Manifesto.
In 1955, yes. A landmark call for scientists globally to work towards peace. And he didn't stop there. He co-founded the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. CND.
And got arrested again.
In 1961, at the age of 89. For participating in civil disobedience, protesting nuclear weapons, it absolutely cemented his status as this global icon of principled, peaceful protest.
What an incredible life. So looking back at it all through Grayling's lens, what are the big themes, the key messages we should take away?
Grayling really pulls out three powerful ideas, I think. The first is that unity of knowledge and action. Meaning that deep thinking, intellectual work, shouldn't be separate from acting in the world. If your analysis tells you something is wrong, like war or injustice, Russell believed you have a kind of moral duty to do something about it.
So no ivory towers.
Exactly. Clarity of thought demands clarity of action. Your knowledge should lead to engagement.
Okay, what's the second theme?
Intellectual courage and honesty. This is huge. Russell was absolutely committed to following an argument wherever it led logically, even if it meant admitting he was wrong, or changing his own deeply held beliefs.
Like his views on pacifism changing slightly regarding Nazism.
Right. He initially held an absolute pacifist stance, but the unique threat of Nazism led him to revise that. Grayling presents this willingness to change your mind based on evidence as the highest form of integrity, not digging your heels in.
That feels very relevant today with so much polarization.
Doesn't it just? And the third theme is beautiful, really. It's what Russell himself said motivated him, the integration of love and knowledge.
Ah, his famous quote.
Three passions, simple but overwhelmingly strong, have governed my life. The longing for love, the search for knowledge, and unbearable pity for the suffering of mankind. He saw that a truly flourishing life needs both the analytical mind and compassion, head and heart working together.
It's such a powerful summary of a life's driving forces. And he had such a way with words, didn't he? Grayling includes some memorable lines.
Oh, absolutely. Quotes that just nail his philosophy, like the one capturing that last theme, the good life is one inspired by love and guided by knowledge.
Simple but profound, unifying reason and passion.
And then there's his critique of dogmatism, which is maybe more relevant than ever. The fundamental cause of trouble in the world today is that the stupid are cocksure while the intelligence are full of doubt.
But it speaks volumes about intellectual humility, right? Recognizing we might not have all the answers.
Absolutely. Which ties into another great one about fallibilism, knowing we could be wrong. I would never die for my beliefs because I might be wrong.
That's a powerful stand against any kind of fanaticism.
It really is. And finally, on war, just cutting through the justifications, war does not determine who is right, only who's left. Pure, cold logic applied to human conflict.
So these are great insights, but how can we, you know, actually use Russell's way of thinking in our everyday lives? We're not all logicians.
True, but his methods are surprisingly practical. Grayling points to a few things. First, cultivating skepticism, using the idea behind Russell's teapot.
The teapot orbiting the sun?
Right. The idea is if someone makes an extraordinary claim, like there's a teapot orbiting the sun, that's too small to see the burden of proof is on them to provide evidence, it's not up to you to disprove it.
So apply that to things we see online or in the news. Don't just accept wild claims. Demand evidence.
Exactly. Make the person making the claim do the logical heavy lifting. It saves you getting bogged down trying to debunk everything. It's about intellectual self-defense, almost.
Okay, that's useful. What else?
Deconstruct problems. This uses his analytical method. When you're facing some big, overwhelming challenge, personally or professionally, try breaking it down. What are the smaller parts? What are the assumptions you're making? What are the actual facts? What are the logical steps? Often, just laying it out like that clears the fog and shows you a way forward.
Like turning a big, messy problem into smaller, logical pieces.
Precisely. And the third application is maybe the hardest, but the most important. Find the courage for principled action.
Following his example.
Yeah. If your reason, your values, your analysis tells you something is right or wrong, Grayling stresses Russell's call to act on that. Align your actions with your principles.
Even if it's difficult or costly.
Especially then, whether it's speaking up against something small at work or getting involved in a bigger cause. Russell showed that living with integrity often has a price, but it's essential for a meaningful life.
So, wrapping up, what's the final thought Grayling leaves us with about Russell?
I think it's that the rigorous life of the mind, that commitment to clear thinking, isn't about escaping the world. It's actually the best tool we have for engaging with it and trying to make it better.
Clarity of thought as a weapon against what? Cruelty and dogma.
Exactly. Russell demonstrated that. And that feels incredibly vital right now.
It really does. Grayling's book paints a picture of this integrated, purposeful life. Where wisdom means being humble enough to know you might be wrong, but courageous enough to stand up for truth as you understand it. He's like a moral and intellectual compass for our times.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world.
This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.